If I could ask anything right now, it'd be like, where do I start planning and how do I plan properly?
I'm a massive advocate for the test model.
It just gives you a broader visual of like what your army is actually going to look like.
The biggest difference between me and you is that I started planning for the game.
What's going to give you the functionality to get it done to where you want it to as quickly as possible?
The key is enjoying painting it, yeah. This is brilliant. So we would have had a... I guess a showcase going up next week at some point.
Yeah.
That you were filming.
Uh-huh.
When James came down, you were taking a little while. I don't know how many you recorded, but like he came down and he was like, oh, I couldn't get my words out. And he hit us with a classic James-ism that I've never heard before.
I'm ready for it.
He said, he was like, oh, my lips are like confetti.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I was trying to get my words out and it was just still coming out I don't know. The funniest thing
was when he was doing it, when he said it, he like paused a little bit because he had to think about what it was.
Yeah,
so he couldn't get his words out while he was saying it.
I was literally, the whole analogy was in itself an example.
Yeah,
of
it was
the
like
thing,
my lips were like confetti.
Yeah.
So right. There you go, there's a new one for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Kick things off.
Well, on that note, we're back.
Yeah,
well,
it's
not been any time for anyone else, but for us, it's been a minute.
Yeah. We pre-recorded a load, didn't we?
Well, you say a load, it was like two, but
something. Well, it was weird, wasn't it?
It was three, really.
We did two lots of pre-recording, so it wasn't like as if we'd just batched loads of them, was it? So,
no,
yeah,
Get what do you call it? The pod rust,
that's what, yeah, a little bit, feels a bit weird. Yeah. Although, yeah. I feel like it's probably not as long as we thought. How long were you away for?
Like 10 days,
yeah, so it's not actually that long.
No, it feels longer, I suppose, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
We've got no excuse, basically, is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, what's everyone been up to hobby-wise for the last little bit?
I've actually painted stuff.
You've painted stuff?
Yeah.
Not just a thing, you've painted multiple things.
Well, it's multiple models within one thing. They're not finished, but okay. I've been working on it.
That's a start, because normally it's nothing, so I'll take it.
Yeah, just carried on with that. I think we touched on it in one of the pre-recorded episodes, but I'd only just started the Null Spirit Pack
Warband. Underworld's Warband.
I've carried on with that.
Is that finished? Can I pull a Croup Shaper here and put it on the screen? Or
I'm very tempted to say...
I am going to touch upon the...
We'll get there.
I'm very tempted to say it's finished just so that you can then put a thing up saying that I did not indeed finish it. But,
and for the audience...
it's not finished, but it's getting there. One of the things I found with them is like they're all so unique, even with the things that they share. When you look at the box art, they're all different colors.
Am I the only one finding that with just Warhammer in general these days?
Yeah,
like
it's
even
really,
just normal units, like basically characters now.
It's been really difficult to like batch paint them because so there's four of them, two of them share skin tones.
Yeah.
And then the other two are individual skin tones. Mm-hmm. So it's three different skin tones straight away. They've all covered in like bones and cloth and little trinkets and things. And all of them have, there's no like.
But that's kind of what those warbands are.
I love the models. Don't get me wrong, but it's so hard to work out how to batch paint them because there's no. We always talk about working in majority color and then going down and down. And it's like, well, on one of them might not even have this color, and the other one, it's the most prominent color.
Yeah. You kind of have to do a Higgled. I can't say the words.
His words are like confetti.
His lips are like confetti.
Higgledy piggledy batch painting.
Yeah. So I've basically did.
HP, B, P.
I basically did all the skin tones. And base coated all the bone stuff. And then from there, I've had to sort of just individually start base coating, like fully base coat a model kind of thing, and then start shading. Because it's just, not a good project to sort of try and get me back in the swing of things.
Can we just wind something back for a second? Because you were like, oh yeah, like, you know, I don't know what it is with models now. I think, you know, they're so much more detailed. You're painting intercessors. You can't use that excuse.
I'm painting
Stone Guard veterans. If you're going to come at me.
I'm sorry. They've got a few little bits extra. Sorry.
George is like, I know how you feel. Yeah. I'm trying to get through this one squad of Stone Guard.
No, more what I was getting at with that was like the amount of detail on models. Not necessarily as much as them being different from each other within a squad. But my point was, you said about how they're much like extra detail and loads of trinkets and stuff on them. What I was saying was models in general now feel like they have like a character level detail for like a basic dude.
Yeah, that's definitely the case.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily.
That is how you get cooler models, isn't it, I suppose. But
yeah.
But yeah.
But I think that's what those warbands are designed to.
They lean into it even more, yeah.
Yeah, because like they're supposed to be all individual. Like that's what they're supposed to be.
It's
yeah.
fun for a game like Underworlds as well, I guess, because they are characters, aren't they? Like you could give them their own sort of narrative and backstory and such.
I mean, yeah, they've got like the thing with Underworlds is that they've kind of got that written for them anyway. There's no real choice. Like you are obviously people paint them however they want, but they're an individual actual thing.
That's the appeal of skirmish games in general, really, isn't it? Because you've got such a few amount of models, you can make them all really unique, and it's just the time investment is reasonable.
Underworld is the best, though.
Yeah, for Underworld specifically, that the story's already written. Like, there's a lot of lore to pull from on an individual model, which is really cool. Yeah,
some people probably prefer to make their own, though, right? I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you can. I guess. I mean,
in the sense of like you're like, oh, Underworld is better because it's all pre-written for you. But I'm sure there's plenty of people who like Kill Team, for example. Because they can like make their own characters and give them their own.
Yeah, I think for me as well within Underworlds, because there's artwork on the cards, I feel like I don't want to paint them my own way because that would annoy me that they wouldn't match.
On the cards. I suppose that would make it confusing at a glance as well if you just want to quickly reference.
Yeah, like, or it's if just it's a like, new even the objective cards and things like that have artwork depicting the characters in certain. Color scheme, whatever. So, but yeah, I've really enjoyed painting them, and I upgraded my wet palette.
Oh yeah.
So we spoke on the wet palette episode where I said I had like one with like a ridge in it and stuff like that.
Uh huh.
And as it turns out,
gone be the trench.
As it turns out, I'd completely forgotten that I had a leftover gift card from Christmas.
Please tell me it was TK Maxx.
For TK Maxx.
Oh, yes. Home runner. Yeah.
So I went to TK Maxx and found the exact ridgeless
Wonder
Tupperware. And I've got to say, the difference is mad. Yeah. Like, it's so much easier to maintain the palette. And it's just I've got a big
the revelation space, that a flat surface for a palette is
all praise
is preferable.
All praise.
No, it's not
gods.
Even necessarily that because obviously I was still using a flat surface. It was just like way smaller.
Yeah,
because I was doing it in the middle.
Oh, so you've gone like bigger.
So now I've got
size.
Like the full size gotcha. Thing. Yeah.
Can we just also like I've noticed something in the office that you've been little rumblings like foreshadowing a larger thing, Joe. So Joe.
What? Why is it little rumbling?
Because I've noticed little things. So Joe came into me and goes, have you got the 10th edition rule book? I went, I got a copy.
Slyly like, just a few different things each day. I was just like,
do we have any of the 10th edition rule books at all?
Yeah, we've got one upstairs. I was like, okay, cool, I'm having a look through that.
If Joe needs to find out about a faction for like project like what we're working on or whatever, like he normally just jump on Lexicanum or like look online or something. And I was like, why does he need them? What's he need a rule book for? And then like a day or two later, we got a few like Leviathan Marine sets upstairs that like I'm like, ask for a rule book. Asking about Marines.
You might notice as well the Dark Angels Codex supplement that's been sat on
my desk.
Oh,
I noticed that. Well, I wonder what that was about.
A little rumbling.
That was months ago. That was like 2 months ago.
Yeah, but now it's gone is what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm taking it home.
Yeah, it's gone.
Because I've been reading it.
Into the shadows.
So what James is saying is we've noticed the breadcrumbs.
Breadcrumbs?
Yeah.
I'd hardly call the 10th edition codex a breadcrumb.
It's a loaf, mate.
Like a bakery, isn't it? Like,
do you want to come out and say it? Is there something you want to share with the group?
I am committing to painting an army.
So you'll have it done before George?
I reckon I'll have it done before George because my standards are way lower than George's.
Dark Angels, I'm guessing.
Well, it's custom. Well, this is the thing. It's a whole thing now.
You're me different. 3 months ago.
Everything's different. But I'm doing it to game with it.
And well, I'm hoping that I could game in mine, hypothetically.
And the gaming side of things...
12 years later.
It's completely...
19th edition, I'm coming for you.
On that note, by the way, if you all could have seen George's realisation as he was looking at points values for the first time and realising that he has painted about 50 points worth of models so far, thinking that he had like a combat patrol or something. Anyway, what
not knocking me for buying all the tanks now, are you?
No, I'm starting to understand some of the comments that people have been making over the last few months.
The gaming side of things different. I don't want to get too much into the gaming, but the whole detachments and chapters and stuff works a lot different in Tenth, which I didn't realize. So I think I'm still just kind of planning on doing a custom chapter so that I can paint other characters and things and use them as whatever. But I don't really know what I want it to look like though.
Maybe we should do an episode on that.
If only we were doing an entire episode on planning an army project.
Yeah, I mean, I've got my first 1,000 points list like written.
You're like reverse engineering it then. So you're doing it literally game ready models, so then you're going to go back.
But I'm writing a list of models that I want to paint. It's not like, this will be a good gaming army. Like, I'm sure the list I've written is absolutely pants.
That's the correct way to do it, in my opinion.
But like, I don't really mind about that.
Build an army you love.
I just picked a load of models that I like and then see if I can fit them in and then build some others around it that I wouldn't mind painting.
You have done a couple of moves better than me, though, where you've worked out a rough points value, because I already bought all my models. And then you reminded me that, like, you can look at all the points online now because the detachments, like, they don't have their own, like, war gear and stuff anymore. So, like, the points are really simple. I was like, oh, brilliant. I'll just, like, plug in my models. 350 points. So.
Got a way to go.
I'm doing that. And it was just, like, I kind of reconnected with some older friends recently, going to, like, shows and stuff, like going to gigs and things, bumping into them, and then sort of like one of them I knew was like into Warhammer, but we haven't really spoke too much about it. But he mentioned I was actually wearing his band's t-shirt on one of the episodes of this once. And I hadn't spoke to him in a while, and he said he like came up on his YouTube thing and was like, is it like, didn't even really recognize it was me at first, but just saw someone that was wearing their t-shirt. And then, so we got talking about that. And then like another friend who I didn't even know was really into Warhammer. So we all just kind of was chatting. We were like, should we do something? So yeah, we're all going to try and learn.
Nice.
10th edition. We're all putting our like first proper armies together. That's good. At the same time.
That's so. Quality that you're all starting at the same time as well. So you're at the same point. It's not like you've got like catch up.
Yeah.
There's no like pressure down your neck to like, oh, they're playing games this weekend, I want to get going.
So it's like Taylor Four Moshers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. There's only three of us at the minute, but yeah.
Well, if you need a fourth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to do it this year.
I didn't realize that there was like, you know, an imminent time.
Yeah. We're very strict on time, and it's, within the calendar year if possible.
Okay. Right.
So I'm going to be hopefully painting an army and playing.
That'd be
game
good.
Of
well, hopefully we can
Warhammer.
Share some tips within this episode.
Yeah, I would love to know where to start, to be honest, because I'm just so... If I could ask anything right now, it'd be like, where do I start planning and how do I plan properly and things like that. So maybe we'll get to it at some point.
If you're a long-term listener of the podcast, you'll know how important it is to have the right tools to aid you in your painting. And if there's one piece of equipment that I could never live without, it's my Onyx lamp from Native Lighting. It doesn't matter what brush or paints you have if you can't see what you're doing in the first place. The Onyx is the perfect lamp for miniature painting because its super bright 2200 lumen LEDs cast soft and diffused light on your models without any harsh shadows. And its daylight balanced color temperature of 6500K gives you the confidence that the colors you are painting are accurate. As someone with a very small hobby desk, by far my favorite feature though is its articulating arm, which clamps to the side of your desk, maximizing your workspace. It's also super adjustable, so you can sit comfortably in the perfect painting position without sacrifice. It also folds up into a compact shape, which is great if you like to travel to paint with your friends. To upgrade your setup and order yours now, head to siegestudios.co.uk/shop or head to the link in this episode's description. Okay, finally, on our little preamble, we've got a quick little announcement that we're going to be at the Miniature Painting Open on the 18th and 19th of May?
Yeah, it's whole weekend, isn't it?
Reminding me, I've got under a month to finish stuff, so.
Yeah, I'm not entering anything.
Get something for your army down, slap it in.
See some cool models, no pressure. I'm just going to be chilling, and these two are going to be like, do you know the funniest thing? Because obviously I went to Warhammer Fest as well. The funniest thing about going to like these painting competitions, if you haven't entered and you're with people that have entered, is like, you see them going from like, pretending to be chill. And then once we're all looking at the models, and my whole thing is just like looking at all these cool models and thinking they're amazing, it, suddenly everyone's just like locks on to looking at the competition and realizing what they're up against and things like that. The vibe changes very quickly.
Well, I'm not going to pretend to be chill at all, because I have planned to enter this for several months. And I have not actually done any of the painting bit, which turns out it's quite important for a painting competition.
So you're just going to have miniatures that are open, built on display?
Yeah. Built? That's ambitious. I like it. Yeah. Optimistic
open
for my
miniatures.
Success.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's why I call it the open, isn't
it? Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, no, I
it's an open box with some sprues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, you cut a little window in the box, you can see the sprue.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, no. Yeah, so under a month and lots of things still to paint. So yes.
Yeah.
I think I might be joining James in painting in a hotel.
Painting in the hotel.
No, no, I have vouched that there will be no hotel painting shenanigans. I can't get my words out. What's going on?
His lips are made of confetti.
Literally confetti. What's he meant to do?
What can literally. You do?
So I will not be painting in a hotel room at all whatsoever. I have firmly decided that all painting or said painting will be done before the event.
So it's an
this is where I cut to the wide and then it's a picture of James.
There's not going to be, there will not be any glimpses of me painting in a hotel
an
room.
Interesting situation now, because this is the first competition we're leading up to where we have a podcast. Mm. So all of these promises are actually being recorded for the first time ever. Previously, it was all these things that everyone would say, but it wouldn't really matter because it wasn't kept. But now it's on camera, it's on audio.
So the elusive Crute flesh shaper will be making an appearance, fully painted for a fact. I am going to get that done. And I've got a few other, quite a few bits and bobs that I've been putting together and refining. And
quite a few.
Yeah.
The thing with James is he's entered a lot of competitions over the years. So he's got a lot of
stuff
ready to go. I myself only entered painting competition for the first time last year. So my cabinet has the entry that I had last year and that's it. I've not done anything
else
since.
The thing is, the MPO, the format of it being an open competition, it's just about your display, as in collectively. So you could have one thing, or you could have 10, or you could have 20. Like, it doesn't necessarily matter. It's more, because one of the things, say you take 5 or 6 or whatever, one of those things could be the thing that's painted the best in your display. And as a result, that's the thing that gets potentially awarded something. Or you could get an award for the collective display. It varies. The open format's very different to like Golden Demon or like a gold, silver, bronze sort of like competition.
Yeah, just an explainer for anyone listening who's like not familiar. Basically, the idea is that you put all of your models like into the cabinet and you've got like a little slot and there's no like category specific stuff.
There is some vague, not vague, but there's a few
very broad
categories. Yeah. I think they split it into 3 types of things in terms of, I'm going off the top of my head here, but I think it is like kind of regular models. They then split like tanks and stuff out, like large models.
Yeah.
And potentially one other thing they make a distinction.
I think it's diorama.
Diorama.
Yeah.
And then within that, they also have the 3 different kind of bandings of the artist, being the beginner,
standard and master.
So
it's not as nuanced as like a Golden Demon, for example, where you just enter a single figure and you're up against like a
50
of
people and yeah. There's multiple opportunities for people to win awards and things, which I would say I would be way more inclined to enter something like this.
Yeah, for sure.
Than Golden Demon for the first time. Still not, because I haven't got the time to put that together. But
yeah, it's nice to be judged on like the merit of what you've done rather than just being squashed because someone else has done something.
Yeah,
like,
I think there's room for both. But it's good.
They're totally different forms of competition.
Yeah, they can coexist. Like,
there's no better or worse. It's just the different forms of competition. But I've got quite a fair bit to get done, and I'm doing something totally different for this one that I've never done before. So I won't say any more other than that. But I'm painting something which is totally outside my comfort zone for something that I normally paint.
So it's not red.
It has some red on it.
It does have red on it.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. Totally outside his
not that far out of his comfort zone.
As in the
it's just a blood angel without black trim. That's I'm so out of my comfort zone here.
It's a Def Company model. Like, come on. Def Company model. It's just something different that I've always wanted to paint. I've had a few sitting in a drawer and I was just like, oh, I'll give it a go. So
any guesses in the comments then for what that might be? It's got a few sitting in the drawer, some red on it. And he's never painted one before.
I mean, that could be quite a wide thing. That's
yeah, I know. I'm interested in what people look. I know what it is. So
yeah, I know what it is as well. Okay, just quickly round this section out then with our listeners' comments. Brad T says, I love the James, in fact, did not finish the Crute Shaper in the background immediately after he said he finished it.
Yeah, I know.
This has happened a couple of times. There's been a few times I've bailed you out where I've not cut to the wire and put it on because I know he's not done it. But yeah. I thought I'd call you out this time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd say my ratio is about 50-50. And I think with the Shaper, it might be like 45-55 now. But yeah, I don't know. I really am enjoying painting it. And I just didn't want to force it, if that makes sense. Like, I would love to have
a solid excuse.
It's optimism. Top, when he's recording, he's like, oh, it's not done yet. But I can say it's done because I've got 2 days before this comes out quickly.
As far as excuses go, that's the gold one, isn't it? Because that's no one can ever go at you for that. I was just enjoying it so much that I want to.
I mean, that's not an excuse.
That is the gold tier. That's the gold standard excuse.
I mean, I'll take that, but that is the reality of it. I literally am enjoying and painting it. Because the thing is, it's not armoured. It's completely different. The colours are completely different. There's hardly any red on it. Like, it's just something completely different.
There's hardly any. I love that red is the.
Come on, it's me. I like red, all right? You know I do. Like,
even though there's no red on it, still enjoying it.
The blue's really nice.
Yeah, the blue is great. Yeah, yeah. I'm really enjoying it. But
we got that far. We know. We still haven't seen it.
I really enjoy it.
We still haven't seen it.
But it will. The Flesh Shaper will make an appearance at some point very soon. I'm not going to.
At the MPO, we've just heard.
Yeah.
You're going to be entering it in the MPO.
Well, I think it will be done way before, and hopefully not this week's episode, because I'm not going to point there and go it's there now. But I think
this is the man who had to announce that he wouldn't be finishing his Mordians for June, like he promised he would, and he's like, oh, "I'll be done way before."
Well, this is why, though. This is why the Mordians won't be done,
because he's enjoying them too much.
Yeah. He's enjoying them too much. All right, there's no red on it.
All right, so five
don't get funny about it.
There's all no right, red. Five Stern Guard torsos over there, like.
Got the legs done now.
They're not attached to each other. But yeah, I hope to finish it next week. So you won't probably see it in the episode, this episode, but you might see it make an appearance in.
Might see it next week.
Next week, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, so.
Mark it in your calendars, everyone.
Yeah, that is a tick.
Next Thursday.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I just realised it has actually got a bit of red on it. I just realised. Yeah, but no, it'll be good.
Okay, Jim Davies says, wife, need anything picked up for your hobby from the shops? Me. Yeah, if you could add a mini fridge to the Bosch drill and maybe a misting spray, that would be great.
No need for a misting spray.
Do you know what this reminded me of? I thought this is the perfect shop for an Aldi or a Lidl, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's got Lidl written all over it.
Exactly.
Lidl's the only place you come home with a drill and like your weekly shop.
Yeah.
And also a mini fridge and a mister for your bonsai trees.
The thing is, you actually could get all those things in one shop in there, which is the best thing.
A fan is always, like, there's always a fan and a TV. There's always, like, a specific fan and a specific TV being, like, on sale, centre of attention.
Mine is always miscellaneous power tools, but way, way, way overkill for what anyone doing DIY should be doing. It'll be like a massive, like, chainsaw or like some sort of miniature excavator for your garden. It's like, who is buying this?
Mold line remover. Done.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, that sums it up. I mean, that episode, that's a little bit unhinged, I feel like.
it did drift into the weeds a little bit. It was good content, I think. That's one of my favourite episodes we've done, actually. It was fun.
That is the one with the wet palette thing.
I
got absolutely, my inbox got full from people messaging me about that.
And Demonic Pathos, who says, this may just be me, but the conversation about using a wet palette was really informational for me. Probably won't put it in a fridge, but who knows?
Yeah, I literally had, after that episode going up, I on Instagram and also even on Facebook, I had people messaging me going, no one's ever shown me how to set up a wet palette before, like properly, like with no air in it and all that kind of stuff, or how to lay the sheet, all that kind of stuff. And I actually had someone, I'll try and see if I can find the photo and we'll get it put up. I had someone.
James did, in fact, not find the photo.
I had someone, that's probably going to be the case. I had someone message me crouching down in a true band style crew shot next to the Tupperware aisle, picking up with the Tupperware with a thumbs up. So
is that not Joe buying his new palette?
Yeah, no, it was not Joe. I can confirm. But it was just really nice to see that that Blue Peter-esque demonstration led to helping people. I think that's one of the things ultimately when we started this that for me really is what I wanted to do with the podcast. I think, like, you know, is to give that advice and help and create those light bulb moments for people that where they've found something that solves a problem for them. And yeah, it was just, I just want to say thanks to everyone that messaged me about it. Cause I thought, oh, this is going to go down like go down badly, like doing a demo live on the podcast or whatever. And it actually turned out to be pretty good. So yeah.
If you want to see any more Blue Peter style demos on the podcast, let us know in the comments down below. And if there's enough of them, then we'll probably do some more.
I will not be doing any drilling live on the podcast.
Well, no, that's probably number one 100%. On my list.
I was going to say, yeah, that we have to have a barrel drill off between both of you.
If we get authority from the listeners to do more demos, that's number one.
Okay.
So if you want to see a drill off, then let us know.
We'll get like 10...
Should we do a speed competition? You know, like when they do the Rubik's cubes and they've got the little mat and like the little timer. We should do that for drilling a barrel.
Do you know my favorite thing about those is because, and you're gonna have to do this as well when you finish the last drill. But they always slam it down.
Yeah.
And when you finish your last barrel, you need to slam it on the table.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Do you know I used to enter them when I was a teenager?
Well, the Rubik's cube.
Yeah, I can do the Rubik's cube thing. Yeah.
That quick.
Yeah. Well, not.
Well, that's another demo.
Not the like 14 seconds, that ridiculous stuff, but like it was like 40 seconds odd.
Yeah, still wild.
Not bad.
Yeah,
I remember trying to learn.
You'll be a lot slower doing barrel drilling. I can tell you.
I got to the bit where you make like a daisy looking thing.
The cross, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm like, I'm out. And then I'll just slam it on the table to get that feeling. But then I'm out. Yeah,
it's been a minute, probably a bit rusty, but
yeah. Minute 30.
Yeah. Yeah, excuses already.
Requiem Wraith says, keeping on with the wet palette theme, I use a Redgrass Games wet palette. They seem to be conscious of James's point as the palette paper pack I have, still the original pack that came with the box, is cut slightly smaller than the sponge, so there's always a bit of sponge around the perimeter of the paper. I brought this up because I also have the Redgrass Games wet palette, and I find that the cut is not exactly the same dimensions. It is smaller, but not like in an even amount. So sometimes if I pick, because the sponge kind of stretches a little bit as well, it might be like, you might have a little strip down one side, but like not another.
Yeah.
And I find that generally they are still, even in like an ideal scenario, it's like a 5 mil gap, like 10 mil gap around the edge. It's like not a comfortable amount for me personally.
Yeah.
So if you do use the Redgrass palette or any other wet palette from any other company, the Army Painter one as well, they are usually cut a bit smaller or the exact same size. I would still say go smaller. So like if you were happy with the paper that came with it, I'd happily just get a hobby knife and a ruler and cut them a bit smaller, or give a go the baking paper that we suggested, which is what I do personally. Morgan Fellows, member of the team, says, I use the exact same system of replaceable Doritos salsa jars as George. They are the perfect size and shape, and getting a new one involves eating salsa, which is an additional win. Wins all the way down. The only question is mild or hot? Hot. Obviously.
Can I just interject? I noticed that something bred in the comments of the last podcast that there was like the biggest debate over the best water pot. Like, I don't know if anyone else noticed that.
Yeah.
Like,
we had pickle jars, everything was being jam jars, in the mix. Candles, anything. Yeah.
The salsa thing just seems too small.
Yeah, I agree. The IKEA candle all day long.
The candles you use are massive. Yeah, they are. The bowl.
Sorry, I forgot about the candle. The candle thing's mental.
It's great.
Do you just burn the candle through to get the glass?
So I used to use the Bon Maman jam jar. Yeah. I used to use one of those. What? I don't know what you're laughing at. Like, I saw plenty of people. I saw plenty of people
I didn't expect the brand name to come out like that.
That's what it is. Bon Maman jam. I don't know what it is. So
Bon Maman.
Bon Maman, yeah. I use a Bon Maman glass. I can't talk now. Kill me. You want to say kill me? I'll try and say it again.
I don't know why that caught me off guard.
I don't know.
I'm glad it caught you off guard. Yeah. That killed me.
So I use a Bon Maman. I can't talk, honestly. So I use a Bon Maman jam jar, and like loads of other people in the comments were saying that they use one of those also. But then, so I used that. I went to IKEA, we bought a load of candles for the house, and obviously it's like quite a big jar. One burnt down, and then you know you're left with the candle like wick part, or the metal plate that the candle's on, that was stuck in the bottom. And while I was washing it up to put it in the glass recycling, and the hot water I was using, just the metal plate just came off, and I was like, that's like amazing water pot for like miniature painting. So I used it,
I love that you're calling it a pot. It is a bowl.
Yeah.
It's bigger than a cereal bowl.
Can we get like bowl. Can we get a picture of it?
Yeah, there will be. The diameter. There will be a picture of the water pot there.
Joe, the diameter is bigger than a cereal bowl.
It's not.
It is. Are we thinking about it? See, look, that says enough.
It might be, yeah.
I mean, that's wild. Yeah. If it's a bowl is arguably...
It's wider than it is tall.
Worse than... Yeah, but so is your little salsa pot. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's a little square.
Salsa pot is wider than it is tall.
It's perfectly square.
I don't think it is.
It is.
George has had the room.
Oh, no, those salsa jars inside.
I want pictures of both. I use a jam jar. I use a bowl my mom. So it's... it's
Why is it tickling you so much? It's just the name of a jam jar. What's wrong with you?
So mine's fine, but I want pictures of both of these contraptions now.
Should we have a bowl off?
Souncer and
should we have a bowl off?
What was he using? The jam jar. Is it a tall one?
Just a normal jam jar. Just a bon maman. Just a normal jam jar. I'll put a picture. Yeah, look, there's all three of them.
We'll do a comparison.
There's all three of them.
There you go.
There's all three of ours up there now. I would say mine's probably the most normal. I haven't seen either of yours. But, yeah. Anyway, it did spark quite a discussion, as it has just done now. So I think that's almost on par with like the bass rim stuff. And that is something you can get into because people have a preference.
I just look at it this way. The bigger the one that you have, the more water it holds, which means when you introduce paint into it, it takes longer for it to get dirty. That's my thought process on it.
True. It's a good point.
Okay, last but not least, I've been waiting to read this one off. It's from Joe C.
I know exactly what this is.
Joe, James, and George. Love the podcast, new listener and subscriber, but decided to write this little poem to celebrate some of the entertainment I've had so far listening to the back catalogue. So
this is the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me, I think. Have you ever had a poem written about it?
Right. Right, let's see if I can give this justice.
From one Joe to another as well.
From one Joe to another.
Even more special.
Let's see if I can give this justice. We're under siege, boys. No time to spare. Crack out the brushes and show some flair. Who needs more than one to be a hero? I'm painting this Titan with just a 000. Let's up our game, lads. Give 100%. Leave the sub-assemblies out, Joe. Get to the main events. Get that model built, every edge neatly trimmed. Let the battle commence over the colour of base rims. This is where the rubber hits the road, the James-isms flow. The perspective becomes real as the paints come and go. You want a blacker than black... You want blacker than black to stay grimmer and dark, or leave the 70.950 out and hide well in the park? It's a question of taste, not a matter of age. So don't go writing off the young lad in a fit of brown rage. Young George makes a stand as he crunches his refreshers. He harnesses the sugar and stands out against the peer pressure. But all in all, the lads know what to bring. A chat about painting by the power of nose rings. Blends and jokes so smooth they'd make a blood angel cry, and the shout goes up, let the people magnify.
I mean, incredible. Incredible. I remember the you were away when that comment came in.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like sitting in the office and I don't know if it was like you or Rio.
I saw it coming.
There was just like a bit of like, there was no one was saying anything. We were all just working. And then we just heard, someone's commented a poem. Or instantly like reading it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for that. That was incredible.
Absolutely tremendous.
Tremendous.
Future t-shirt, definitely on the
back.
Yeah,
yeah. The whole, just print the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, I want like a Star Wars like intro. Scroll.
Yeah, just with that.
Yeah. Brilliant. If you enjoy listening to these podcast episodes every single week, I'd like to ask that you could please do us one small, tiny favor in return and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or the follow button on your podcast app. It takes only 2 seconds and it really, really helps us out, and it allows us to bring you these episodes for free every single week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode. Topic this week, planning your Warhammer projects the right way. So Joe, you alluded to earlier that you're starting a little army project.
I know, the timing here is just impeccable.
It's like it was. It's like it was coordinated.
It's like it was
yeah, planned. I mean, you'd say that sarcastically, but it wasn't.
No, like, it
you had no idea.
No, it genuinely wasn't.
You had no idea. But it does line up quite nicely. Yeah.
No, this topic was actually at a suggestion from one of the listeners. So thank you for the topic suggestion. If you want to leave your own topic suggestions on the podcast, go and become a Patreon member. We have a special area in the Discord where you can submit topic ideas like this one. Yeah, we want to talk about planning kind of as a whole. It works out quite well because James is sort of midway through doing an army. I'm sort of starting an army-ish and you're looking at starting one. So
I'm so glad you didn't say midway through your own army.
Yeah. No. Well, I know where I stand.
George is like, I'm nearly done with the torsos.
I'm nearly done with the limbs. Yeah. So, yeah. No, planning is something that we've spoken about a lot, but I think people still overlook just based on pure excitement. And when I say overlook, I mean, like, we like to get quite nuanced about how we plan stuff, don't we, James, in particular? Let's rewind all the way back then. So I guess there's three sort of main points in this. You've got the kind of like the idea of having an army, kind of like where you're at. You've got the, I've bought all this stuff, now what the hell do I do? And then the sort of build prep stage bleeding into the painting stage. So I guess we could like hit all of those as we go. So you've spoken about like planning out your list and that sort of situation. How's that been?
Yeah, that was, so I have a little bit of gaming experience from 8th edition.
And Kill Team. You play Kill Team.
Kill Team, when they first brought it back, as I've spoken about before, I got quite into that. But that was still very different to 40K, I would say. But I played some 7th edition. That was when I got actually back into it. And then I played 8th edition semi-regularly, I would say. I think touched 9th once to try and learn the rules, and we just all kind of decided that it which wasn't for us. So didn't play 9th at all, really. And then now it's 10th. And as we were building up to 10th coming out, I did get the feeling of like, you start hearing the whispers, don't you, about like what it's going to be like, the changes they're going to make. We obviously know a lot of like content creators and stuff, so when we were at Warhammer Fest and they were demoing it, you could get some, we got to talk to the developers even, and just hearing about the new system and everything, and I was kind of like, oh, I could, this does sound like I could get back in on it.
I think me and you spoke about it a bit at the time of like, oh, they're simplifying things down, it's going to be much more accessible, like much easier to get into, and I kidded myself to a degree of thinking like, oh, this will be the one where I can like finally get in. But I think after the, I don't want to say burnout, but after the like rush of me and James getting them Hawklords done, I think that kind of checked me out because like, I'd already painted those like which are going to be like studio models. So I was like, do I really want to like do this again? And then there was like a big break, and now I'm like kicking off the Blood Angels. And by now, like there's all of the new Space Marine stuff that came out towards the latter end of last year and stuff. So I guess that's kind of reinvigorated my excitement for it.
I think for whatever reason at the time, it just didn't get me. It didn't get me enough to get me in. So I just didn't really even learn much about 10th edition or anything like that. And then after a while, you do start to hear like the negativity. There's always people moaning, and I think
but change is never taken. You know, change is something that.
Yeah, I just think potentially like I let the negativity, like especially online.
Yeah.
Kind of make me think, oh, there's no point. Do you know what I mean? Like, which is stupid, really. And like, we should know, especially as people that do what we do, we should know to not like completely buy into just people are moaning about online.
But it's a system that like has a several year long life cycle. So it's funny because like it first comes out and everyone's like, oh, it's new, it's amazing. And then like a couple months later, everyone's whinging about it because of the state of it, but forgetting the fact of like, this is going to be like a 3-4 year ride. And like kind of now I think it's matured a little bit. Maybe you're not hearing
that
as
that's,
much.
That's normal because what happens is, I mean, obviously I played quite a few editions before I hung up the dice, so to speak, and stopped playing. But
when he said hung up the dice, I'm imagining like, you know, those fuzzy dice people have in their car.
Yeah, yeah.
what did you think I was rolling? Yeah. Was like, you know, I find that an edition will be like that first couple of, when it comes out, people are like, oh, this is not how I remember the previous edition, or it's different to the one. They don't like it. Then an update comes out, and then like, oh, actually, that's maybe a bit better, or maybe that's still not as good. And then you get like the latter 2 years or so of like that edition, where people just get used to it because that's the edition now, and the cycle repeats. Yeah. So,
you must remember this with Kill Team, like when the new version of Kill Team came out, everyone was like doing their nut.
Well, so I
everyone loves it.
I didn't play the new version of Kill Team because I kind of resented a little bit that at the start of it, any of the Kill Teams that you'd built kind of wouldn't work. They wouldn't carry over. I kind of didn't like that, so I didn't bother going into
the Simon from either. The team was the same. He made loads of Kill Teams. Like, he made all these awesome Kill Teams for his, because he wanted to play, but he didn't want to do an army or whatever for time constraints. And so I was like, yeah, like he had like, how was it like, remember when
he had
at Christmas too, he was going to bring up a load and play like in Warhammer World. Remember? Yeah. He had like 8 or 9 Kill Teams and he was like, I can't use
them.
So yeah, but
I also kind of think like the things with like the codexes and stuff, like, you always, when a new edition starts, people are waiting for their codexes. And I remember specifically in my gaming experience, like I got stung quite bad. For anyone else that might remember this as well, as I say, 8th edition was the main one that I was playing, and I wanted to do Dark Angels, and Dark Angels did not get a codex supplement for like ages. Yeah, So I was playing basically just, I was playing like index, like pre-codex Space Marines against people that had like codex Space Marines, and it was just like ridiculous.
That's one thing for me, I think, touching upon the topic that we're talking about with army planning and stuff, that's one thing that I think if, and I don't want to get into the gaming side too much, but like genuinely, like if in within an edition, everyone got an update and every faction or army got the thing. And I know that's a massive ask because of how much rules writing and how much investment of time that is. And I know it's a complete, you know, genie in a lamp situation. You know, it's not like it can possibly happen. But I think that's the one thing for me that I completely synergize with you on. It's like, it's frustrating. Like you waiting for your thing that you love to get all the things.
Yeah.
So then you can create the army and start that first bit of planning what your army's going to be.
Well, and it does factor into my planning. So the reason I've picked Space Marines currently is because it was, I mean, Orcs have just come out, which if we were a little bit further down the line when I was making this decision, I might have landed on Orcs instead because the codex has just come out or just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, one thing I do think the GW have done really well is they released the kind of schedule,
the release schedule
of the codexes.
Yeah,
so
I do
you
like
at
that.
Least know... You know,
you
if you are
radar.
A diehard, you know, whatever army player, like diehard Tau player, you could have looked at the thing and gone, okay, it's coming out roughly early 2024, something like that. So out of the ones that were already out at the minute, you know, preferably, I probably would have preferred to do something like Chaos-y or something like that, but that codex isn't coming out for a while, as far as I'm aware. And I wanted to have something that had a proper codex. Space Marines just seemed like an easy thing that has some cool models that I like. So I'm not necessarily doing like the army that I love the most because part of my plan was to game with them. I've taken that part into consideration as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's the perfect choice. They're heavily supported and it means that you can pick any chapter that you want and with a custom scheme and do whatever you want. It's what we actually, in a lot of the times I speak to clients, is the thing that we recommend the most when it comes to.
Yeah.
That's why we do a lot of custom schemes, is because it gives you flexibility.
The flexibility thing with the custom schemes, that has completely changed now. Like, you can just paint your Blood Angels and then use them in different Space Marine detachments that give them what would typically be considered the Imperial Fists rule.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because part of my purpose for the way I'm doing my Blood Angels is, one, I personally don't want loads of like named characters anyway, because this is just not my flavor. Like, I just want to have just sort of general guys. But within that, I'm just buying only like generic Space Marine models. I'm not doing any chapter specific stuff to Blood Angels, knowing that if I do want to game with them down the line, I'm not going to be locked into Blood Angels. They're going to be painted like Blood Angels, but for all intents and purposes, they could be Ultramarines.
Like, but the thing is now, it's literally like with the detachments, it's not even like that's an Ultramarines detachment with an Ultramarines rule. It's got its own name and you can put any Space Marines you want into it. And the picture on it is Ultramarines. So they're kind of hinting towards you that this is the Ultramarines focused one. And then in the supplements, you get specific Blood Angels ones where, yeah, say, for example, you did want to take Mephiston.
Yeah.
You would have to look at a Blood Angel specific one.
Yeah. But with mine, if because I'm doing like just a generic. Because
you're doing all generic, you can, yeah, you can pick and choose whatever ones you
exactly
want.
Exactly.
So, I mean, most of the time, you could have done that before anyway with friends and stuff. Like, mm-hmm, tournaments might be different. I will just caveat when I'm talking about gaming, I'm not talking about tournaments at all. I don't have a clue about the specifics of what you're allowed to do and stuff like that. I'm talking about playing with friends. And then the other thing was the other two guys that I mentioned, one of them's doing Tau and one of them is doing
someone
Necrons.
Has to.
Yeah, one of them's doing Necrons. I, you know, slowly as we've been doing this thing, I'm like really coming around to Tau as a vibe, as like a, what they look like. I quite like the
Tau word bearers. What next?
Raven, yeah, Raven Guard. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Quite like, not, don't be stupid. So, yeah, so I maybe would have looked at Tau because their codex has just come out and I quite enjoyed painting that test, little tester crew. But one of the other guys kind of a bit more of a diehard Tau fan and I know he's going to be doing that first anyway. So, yeah, that kind of worked into it and I knew that I would be, I would enjoy, there's certain Space Marine models that I already own and there's certain Space Marine things that I want to paint. So that's where maybe my planning was a little bit different to yours in terms of picking an army. I don't necessarily love Space Marines so much.
Let's go into a little bit more of the nuance of that then. So was it sitting and like doing a list in like the app or was it just looking at the sort of units that you roughly want to tally up points wise?
I knew that I didn't want to spend like loads of money on new models and things like that. I knew that I had some Space Marine models just kind of sitting around. So I was like, do I actually want to paint them? How can I work those into the list potentially? So I started with those and then I looked at what the Leviathan half contains and what I like out of those.
Are you doing that then? Are you going with one of the box sets?
Yeah, so I've got the Space Marines half.
Okay.
I don't think I can fit it all into the full Space Marine half. Basically, is around 1,000 points.
Right. There's quite a lot of characters in there, though, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's not a ton of models.
If you took the whole half of the whole Marines half, you're pushing 1,000 points. And obviously, I've got a couple of other models that I wanted to push in, so I'll probably mostly use that, and then I'll sub in a few different ones, but. Again, I'm not really looking at it from like being a gaming point of view. There's a ton of cool models in that Space Marine half. I like, we've spoken before, I'm in like the minority where I like the Primaris tanks. Mm. So I like Repulsors and Impulsors and Gladiators and stuff.
There are a lot of the Combat Patrols and other box sets, aren't they?
Yeah, so I definitely want to get, I had this like thought process of getting a Repulsor and putting all the Infernus Marines in it, mm-hmm, with like a captain.
Yeah.
So just having this big like
barbecue wagon.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I think I'm going to be doing that. So yeah, like the Infernus Marines, I think are pretty cool. I've always liked Flamer stuff. I think Flamers are fun. Terminators are obviously. Terminators are quite high points though. So I don't know whether they're going to feature in that. They might have to make way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the, it really wasn't that much thought going into it. Like I'm kind of just wanting to paint some cool models and then play some games with them. But I think the list writing aspect, I was doing it on the app, and the list writing aspect is so much easier now. Mm. There's so many less restrictions of what you can put in your lists and how detachments work and stuff. And that is a big reason why I think the current edition does benefit people who care a bit more about painting potentially.
For someone like me, the revelation that there was just this PDF that I could look at and it just said intercessors this many points, I was like, oh
yeah, yes,
this is for me.
Yeah, like this, you don't have the restriction of, well, you need to at least, you know how detachments used to work, mm-hmm, where it's like you have to have a character plus three infantry type units, yeah, or whatever. Like there's no restrictions like that.
Didn't anymore. It get like really specific in ninth of like who has what weapon and grenades?
The units used to come with specific weapon loadouts and you could pay extra points to change weapons and swap things out.
That was always a thing though. What it used to be was when you were writing your list, what detachments you picked used to limit you to what you're allowed to choose. So you would choose this detachment and you would have to pick, you would almost, effectively in any detachment, you would have to pick a character and three like basic infantry units before you're allowed to add anything else.
Right.
That's what it felt like. Whereas now you just add whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like you get benefits, I guess, if you add regular infantry units. You can use more of them and they're probably better at objectives.
So for me, the layman then, who's never played before,
so
if I'm going to start, like, say, a 1,000-point list, I literally just need to, however I get to that many points is...
You can fit it in whatever detachment you want. As long as the restrictions are now more like this type of model can't be in this detachment in terms of, like, if it has a Blood Angel keyword and it's not a Blood Angel detachment, sort of thing. So that's what it was, really. It was just working out what models I like, what models I fancy painting, adding them all up in the app and getting to around about 1,000 points and kind of going from there. I'm waiting to get this Underworlds thing finished
before I start
painting.
Well, that now is the perfect time to plan it, though.
So now is a perfect time to plan it, because I still want to do, even with all the freedom of the detachments, I still want to do a custom scheme, just because I like the idea of being able to... Almost opposite to you, I like the idea of being able to get all the named characters, but kind of bring them in and make them a different character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like,
you mean as like a starting model and turn it into your own?
Yeah, not even heavily converting it, maybe. Like, maybe I will just paint an Asriel, but it's just not Asriel. Do you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, for gaming purposes, it'll be Asriel, but.
I suppose from a planning perspective, then yours isn't too dissimilar to mine in the sense of you want to enjoy painting and such.
Yeah, that's the key part, and then I also will just play games with them as well. But the key is enjoying painting it. Yeah,
as artists, we know how time consuming painting miniatures is, especially if you want to achieve a high standard for tabletop or display. Life is busy, and we don't all have 8 hours a day to paint. Plus, if you're still early in your painting journey, it may feel that you're a long way off ever owning your own beautiful army for your games. For 10 years, Siege Studios has been delivering bespoke miniature painting commissions to collectors and gamers all over the world. We have a world-class team of artists from Golden Demon winners to ex-studio painters, collating hundreds of years of collective experience. Here at Siege, we offer a series of painting levels and services to meet your needs and budget, whether you want a favorite character for your display or a stunning gaming army. We pride ourselves on offering well above the industry standard of quality and our customer experience. To see our gallery, learn more about our services, and get a quote now, head over to siegestudios.co.uk or head to the link in this episode's description. Yeah, with mine, I guess that's probably the error that I made, because I was thinking about gaming with it. And I think when I started the project, I was like, I'm only going to paint. And now I'm like starting to get a bit further down the road, and I've sort of learned a bit more about how 10th works and how easy it would be to kind of get there. I'm thinking about gaming a bit more, and I wish that I'd probably planned the buying of models part a little bit more tactically. But I purposefully reserved myself and didn't go out and like buy like loads of stuff and like starter sets and like have a big pile of things to do, because I know that I might change my mind at a later point. So I've just started with like a couple of boxes. But I guess that's the evolution of that.
See, I'm completely different. I'm not interested in the gaming side at all whatsoever. So I'm just like, I want to do a Morley Nine Guard regiment. So I've gone.
But this is the beauty of it.
60 infantry, couple of command squads, couple of flagmen, bannermen.
But the beauty of it is, and I hope if they do make any changes as they go 11th, 12th, whatever, I hope this detachment thing sticks and the openness of the list building sticks, because the beauty of that is that you can paint this army without gaming in mind at all.
Yeah, I literally have.
But you could game with it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, like, no,
you could
I get
fit
that.
It in a detachment really easily.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many less restrictions. I mean, like, that part of it I really like.
That will make it more fun for, I suppose, for people that do just want to collect an army because they like the army and they don't really care what models or units they have, or, you know, like,
That's exactly us, isn't it? Surely?
Yeah, I suppose so. But
why I'm saying I think it benefits people who care more about painting, because now you get more of a reason. You have more of a reason to only pick the models that you enjoy painting, unless you're going to get super competitive, go to tournaments, chase them out, or whatever.
Yeah,
but you almost have more of it. Like the whole stumbling block before was, I could do. I could do Space Marines, but I'm going to have to paint 30 Tactical Marines minimum. Do you know what I mean? And then I might get some of the models I like in on top of that. But
yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I bought these, I wanted to paint these anyway. Like, I just picked these because they're fun and I could paint with them. because I wanted to paint them. And oh, result, I can use them in the game. Like, yeah. there's nothing.
I have to completely rejig my whole list to fit them in. Yeah. I just take that out.
That's exactly what happened with my firstborn Blood Angel army, because I had set it out all a certain way and I'd made it match the Force Orc 100%. You know, and then the edition changed, or I think the codex changed, and then all of a sudden, like as an example, 5-man assault squads couldn't take double melter gun, and I'd made all my combat assault squads have double melter gun, and I was left with like about 8 melter guns that had no friends.
And yeah. The other thing I would say with that is that now that the points aren't off of the the different war gear doesn't cost points.
Yeah, yeah.
It's way easier for you to just. You could still, if you were playing a casual game, you could still put those all out and just be like, he only has one, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's
yeah.
the same amount of points, so it's yeah, no one's yeah, going to be like annoyed. Yeah. Do you know what yeah, I mean? Yeah, like, no. Whereas if it was all different points, it would get a bit more complicated because I'd be yeah. like, well, is he like adding an extra thing, or like, is he not worked that out properly? Or
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Points
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It just feels a bit easier.
No, definitely. From what I've seen, it does.
Yeah. So that's.
Maybe one day. Maybe I will pick up gaming again in the future at some point. I don't know. I'll never say no, I suppose.
But, if it's a scenario where like you're going to paint all of those models anyway, which you are,
yeah,
and you're just doing it for yourself, and you're just going to have them in a cabinet, and they're going to look nice,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
we went, oh, let's play a game of 10 for like 1,000 points. You'd be able to literally just look in your cabinet and go, oh, actually, I've got a list.
A valid point. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So that's part of the biggest step of the planning was that, and I guess that's the biggest difference between me and you is that I started planning for the game, but then again, that's proven that. That it's the way they've done the detachments and the points and everything is really helpful, because you can now change your mind at this point and be like, oh, actually, I'm going to work out a bit more about the game and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, well, let's kick this more into our wheelhouse then for the paint perspective podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Painting. Yeah. You've got your models, you've got your stack of Grey Shame ready to go. There's a few ways to tackle planning an army, I suppose, anywhere from don't plan it at all, just wing it, do a few models at a time. Some people like to go squad by squad. James likes to just build everything and prime everything and do everything red and then do everything that's black and then do everything that's green and then do everything. You've got a lot of ways to sort of tackle this. So I'm intrigued because you've said yourself, you've not really ever done like proper big army projects before. So now 47 episodes deep into me and James talking about painting thousands of models. Yeah. What are you thinking? Have you learned any of the little bits of a bit of info that we've dished along the way?
Again, because the gaming thing is there, I think that changes things a little bit, because I at very least need to get everything built together because I want to game with it. And I also potentially...
Is that in the sense of like, because you could game with it at any point, even if it's not painted?
Even if it's not painted. So basically what I want to do is the kind of, and I've already said this to... In the group chat, I think what I would aim to do is get everything base coated and everything like shaded. So I would probably, as it's 1,000 points and it's not like I'm doing, when I did the Necron thing, it was 2,500 points of Necrons, I think.
Is that, as someone who doesn't really know points values, is that a significant number
of
models?
A lot of points back then.
In terms of models.
Yeah. Necrons army that I've spoken about doing before had 60 infantry models and then everything else. I don't know what the exact model count was, but it had a lot of models.
So probably similar to my Mordians then.
Maybe. It had 60 infantry.
Yeah.
It was about 12 Skullpec destroyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're getting into...
So that's why it was very overwhelming. So I think Space Marines, a little bit more elite in terms of model count. I'm not going full infantry, loads of infantry. I'm going quite elite infantry, okay. Which is probably why it's not going to be very good for 1,000 points. But for painting purposes...
Is that just to reduce the model count and make it easy for yourself? Is that because you just happen to want to paint those models?
I think it's a bit of both. But I do think in general, a lot of the like more elite units just look cooler anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So I think in general, what I'd like to do is build it all, base coat it all, and then get some shading on all of it, and then I would be happy to game with it.
Yeah.
And then I can take my time individually, like maybe unit by unit, in terms of like fully painting it.
But that's what I always say, like that I know you said about I build them all, I clean them all, base put the base of material on, undercut them all, prime them all, maybe not red, and then like etc. Like I always say this, like the return point is not right at the beginning of the process, which with when it comes to working a project, is it makes it 10 times better for you, because there's nothing worse than doing that with one box, getting it all the way to fruition and completion and finishing the thing, and then looking back at your grey shame and going, I've got to do that all again on everything else. Like, that's why I do recommend you build everything, clean everything, put the basing material on everything, undercoat everything, get it all to the point where the main armor color is on. And then every time you can just cherry pick and go, oh, today I fancy starting painting the bike squad. So just going to start painting those, get those through, you know, I think. And then if you do decide halfway through, oh, do you know what? I've had enough of bikes. I mean, I want to paint some scouts or some intercessors. You haven't got to go and get a box and build it and clean it. Like, you're literally like, oh, I'm going to start putting the black on that, on those now. It's just the return point. So much easier.
My counterpoint to that is, because I'm kind of trying something new with mine, because whenever I've done army projects in the past, it has been very, mostly they've been for commissions anyway, so it's been very regimented, build everything, get everything done, process oriented. And this time round, partly because initially I said to myself that it was going to be like, oh, high-end gaming, that ship has sailed, they're going to be all Golden Demon level, you know, 10 years from now. But because of that, like, I knew I wanted to work on them more individually, so I didn't want to bite off more than I could chew. And I didn't want to spend 3 months just doing like black highlights on everything. So I've done mine in my rule is box by box.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to get too refined of it. Cause like, for example, the way I would normally like to paint a display level model would be on its own. Mm-hmm. There's going to have to be some sort of trade off where like a box of intercessors is 10 models. I'm not going to paint them all like one at a time, but if I'm going to have two boxes of intercessors, I'll probably do like one box at a time. Mm. Counterpoint, like, to what you said, being it's a bit more manageable. One, in terms of space, I haven't got to have like all of these built models like out and about. I haven't even got to buy them all yet. Like, I kind of have a rough idea of the stuff I want to get, but I'm just kind of doing it piece by piece. And it's kind of just sort of like arcing project. Downside being, I can't just play with them unpainted and like get a feel for the game.
There is that though. That's the one thing that doing it the way I suggested helps, because even if they're undercoated, you can still play a game.
Yeah,
and you can go, actually, that unit maybe isn't as good in my army, so maybe they'll be like not the priority thing to paint.
I think that has entered my head, because I even said to like,
you can go around in circles doing that as well, can't you? End up like never actually getting anywhere because you're constantly changing your list.
It does happen. Yeah.
One of the guys is like, had already been painting his army, so he's like nearly done with his 1,000 points. And I did say, like, I didn't actually say this, but I was going to say, like, how do we feel about, like, how is everyone with, like, are we happy to do some test games while we're learning, like, without them being painted or just them being built or something? Because of that very thing where I was like, what if, you know, I put all this time painting them and then they're rubbish or I end up not using them or something like that. But I think because of the sole thing of this, or the main focus being it's all models that I like, and all models that I want to paint anyway, I'm not going to be as annoyed if I paint them and then I come to a game and maybe I don't want to use them in a game again, because I've still just painted some models that I like.
Yeah, fair.
So it's not as much. I can understand it more when people are painting just to game. Like, the painting is the slog for them. They're not enjoying it and they just want a game.
Yeah.
Then 100% like, I'd be interested to hear how more gaming focused people feel about that. But I would assume that it's like recommended to play some games without them being fully painted first. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
I think for me, because I'm picking models that I really want to paint first and foremost anyway, not as worried about that. So that's why I've set myself the goal of the kind of base coating them all, shading them all, and then I'll like fully base them.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I can game with these now. And then as I go through with them, I can actually start highlighting and bringing them up.
Good way of doing it.
Yeah. Let's get into the nitty gritty then of the actual like processes. Mm-hmm. One thing I'm curious about, are you taking into account build choices in the sense of like, oh, I'm going to build this guy with this gun because it's actually like looks easier to paint or quicker to paint or anything like that? Or are you going there like, well, I'm just doing this because I really enjoy painting, so I'm just going to make everything look cool?
So I had this with the Necrons, because the Necron infantry has 2 gun options and I didn't know the rules at all. I just picked the one that looked coolest. Easier to paint. No, not coolest. Easier to paint. coolest would be the double barrel one.
Yeah.
The double one.
Yeah.
And I just stuck the single one on all of them.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it, I was like, the coolest was definitely it, but that was, I was thinking of painting. To be honest, I don't really think, especially because I'm coming from the Leviathan box, I haven't got a lot of weapon options and things like that.
It's pretty stock.
It's like a lot of them.
I don't
like,
remember there being any options.
Yeah, a lot of them are like push fit and stuff. Yeah. So all I have is, all I have to add to it really is a Primaris Captain, which I already have built, which is the limited edition plasma pistol power fist one.
What model?
Which is one of my favorite marine models they've released.
What's a model?
Had it built for ages. I posted this on Instagram not too long ago. I did a trade with Will from the team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he sent me that model. I sent him another model. And I've been too scared to paint it ever since just because I love the model so much.
I absolutely adore that model. It's yeah. one of my favorite ones. I'm going to drop it, but Dazza's version of it in that color scheme
is
with the head swap. I think it's got a head swap on it. It might not, but...
Has he put the flames on it?
Yeah. That is literally one of my favorite like heavy metal
paint jobs.
Like recent paint jobs.
It's such a cool model.
Yeah.
And so I've got that I want to put in. So then, but I do like, obviously it makes sense with Dark Angel stuff, but I do like plasma stuff as well. And he's got a plasma pistol, which is cool. There's certain things in terms of like characters leading units and only certain, because that's a new thing that you wouldn't have known of, I suppose.
Death Stars are back from what I've heard.
Characters are attached or can be attached to units now, yeah. Which is really cool. But then there's certain things of like, if you want to attach a captain to a Hellblaster thing, he has to have a plasma pistol and things like that.
Right, okay.
So I was kind of thinking, okay, well, I definitely want to use that captain. So do I maybe get some Hellblasters so that I can put him with the Hellblasters because he's got his... So, yeah. Other than that, like, I don't think there's too many options, really, that I have with my things. Because, as I say, I want to get some tanks and stuff, but...
Let's say, hypothetically, you did have the option and they were full multi-part.
I think I probably would take ease of painting into consideration. Especially because the points thing doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Like I was saying to James, it's way easier for me to just say, especially if like it's a repulsor or something, and it's got like loads of guns. Hardly anyone is really, the whole point of like WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get on your models.
It's to make it easy for tournament.
To make it easier for the opponent to know what you've got.
Yeah.
For a bunch of people like learning the game, no one's going to be looking at my repulsor and going, oh, I didn't realize you had the so-and-so missile. Yeah. That looks like the shield to me. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and I do feel a bit better about that stuff. The more that I get to know the projects that we do for clients, there are so many things on specifically Tau and Eldar that are war gear options that literally don't even have a part that exists. Like there's things that like you can, because we get asked to do certain things on like Eldar, the classic one is on Eldar, like, what's the flyer things?
Like, the Skyrunners?
No, the
actual ships.
Falcon.
Yeah, like the Falcons and things. Wave Serpent is there's certain war gear options that you could always take on those that there aren't actually a part for. So
like the Serpent Stone and stuff like
things
that.
Things like that. Yeah, so like the
Oh, so you've got people who've like made a list in like an app and they see the weapon
and they'll
option.
Put it on their client and put it on their client spec sheet and be like, yeah, I want this loadout. And then we'll be like, well, that part doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
So like knowing that that exists in the game, that's what we feel a bit better about, you know, putting a certain version of a bolt rifle on instead of another certain version.
That
of
gets
a bolt
me
rifle.
with the Space Marines is the like the four different
bolt
magazine things that go on.
On that one, I just think, put whatever one you find. Yeah. Other than the one that changes the backpack as well, isn't there?
That's the Hellblasters have a different.
Haven't they changed it so that like, it doesn't matter what magazine you put on the gun now or something like that?
I think it's based.
I know that a Stalker bolt rifle should have like the bigger scope. And
yeah,
like that,
I think it's literally. I think the reason people say that it doesn't matter now is because of the points thing.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't matter. Like,
I'm sorry, but like I think that the box mag on the bolter just looks the best. Don't care. Like,
yeah,
I used to always just think it was an aesthetic choice. I didn't even know that there was like rules.
Yeah, there's different rules. One's like an assault version. One's a heavy version.
I mean, look, I understand why.
Some of them do look basically the same. One of them's like the mag is straight. One of them's the mag is curved. Curves. Yeah, but otherwise they look the same.
Yeah.
I definitely think with that stuff, when it comes to that stuff, I think painting preference will probably come into it. Because again, I'm only gaming casually, so
okay.
Well, too much. Yeah, I mean, like, first things first. I think like for approaching it once you made those options and things, like to move it on to the next bit. Like, I think you know what I'm going to say when it comes to this. Like for the painting, like you got to plan it. You got to plan it because in that way you can make all the important decisions. I know there's got to be the fun part of it where you're making choices for things, and I do recommend that you kind of get a lot of the skeletal decisions in place, and then you can kind of do those other things that are a bit more nuanced or artistic on the wing, if that makes sense.
I'm a massive advocate for the test model, and I know people see test models as kind of like a procrastination project, but if I hadn't have done the test model for my Blood Angels, I would not have made 3 or 4 pretty significant changes that I would have really, that it really would have irked me like down the road, and I would have ended up wanting to change it. I would have ended up having to go back and repaint a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely will be doing a test model.
Yeah.
I'm a bit 50-50 on it. Like I understand the reason why people do it. I think that if you make a lot of those choices beforehand by writing them down, you at least have some kind of framework for when you approach it. So you don't really need to do...
Sometimes you just get it wrong though. Like mine was planned, but I didn't like the result.
I was going to say, I'm talking about doing what you're saying, what James is saying, but then doing a test model with that.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So that I can then make changes to that if I need to.
I planned my recipe out and I thought I had everything dialed in. I'd made all my color choices. I knew what paints I was going to use. I'd written like a rough recipe based on like painting those colors before. And then I painted it and I was like, oh, I don't like the leather. I don't like the black leather because it's too much against the black trim. Oh, I actually don't want to use that color as a ricochet because the paint didn't behave nicely. And there was like 3 or 4 like pretty significant paint changes that I'd made that I wouldn't have done otherwise.
I do understand that. And I have done them in the past with projects and things like that. But one thing I will say is that focus on one individual model, sometimes when you do a unit or you do like a bigger part of it as a force or something, it's only at that point when you see it en masse that certain changes and decisions that you make have more precedence. Like say for example, as an example, just hypothetical, like you paint all of them a certain way and then you go, oh, actually, you know what? I want to know a way of designating which one's a sergeant, you know? So you'd choose a sergeant to have different helmet color or something like that.
That's kind of like an additive change. That's not like a fundamental.
You're not going to make that decision and discover how the colors work in mass on one test model. So
that's true. But like, that's something that you can just, that's like an extra step you can add. Like with mine, it was like, the recess shade paint, like I didn't like how it looked once I'd started adding highlights. I wouldn't have known that.
George's talking more about the basics of the color scheme, and I think you're saying don't be scared to make changes once you see all things all together.
Yeah, because it's ultimately your army painting, like you're painting a large body.
It's a different thing.
It's completely different.
Similar, like, again, when we were talking to Peachy, it is like a different mindset. Isn't it?
They're
painting an army.
Painting is painting, but then when it comes to doing mass, it's different.
It's just different things to think about.
Yeah.
That you're only going to think about once you get to that point of looking at his 60 models in front of
you. Are you going to question that recess shade when 60 models are down on the table?
The reason I say that is because like it made the process slower. It made it more arduous. Okay. I didn't like the result of doing it. I'm glad I wasn't already locked in.
It's a good point though. Let's say the leather color, you said you didn't like the black pouches or something.
Yep.
But that is, you're looking at it on a single model.
Mm.
How are the pouches going to look when there's 30 of them?
That's fair.
Do you know what I mean? It might look a bit different. I don't think pouches is a good example, but do you get what I'm saying?
I do get what you're saying.
Like, it's more coming up with color schemes and stuff. I think that's going to help with.
Yeah. The difficulty is you can't really do both. Well, I guess you can do both, but you can't really make changes on the fly. I think
what you should do is do a test army.
my point I was trying to make is that like as long as you're neat and thin with what the paint application, things like that, and even a recess shade to an extent.
Oh, you can repaint it. Yeah,
like you could. I would get a plan, paint a unit, and go, how does this look? Because then that way, when you look at it, you go, right. Well, actually, maybe I do want the sergeant to be noted, so I'll paint the helmet a different color, or maybe that doesn't look great. It won't take you hours to repaint that one detail across the 10 or 5, even 5 or whatever, but it just gives you a broader visual of like what your army is actually going to look like. I've done it before and I'm quite happy to admit it. Like I've painted a test model in the past. I've done it and I'm really happy with that. The moment I've painted 5 of them, I'm like, they don't actually, doesn't look how I want, how I thought or how I want it to look in mass as an army.
Yeah.
You know, like it.
Well, in terms of like paint choices and stuff, I do quite like it though, especially if you're not like certain on what your recipe is going to be.
Yeah.
And also it gives you like something to know what you're striving towards. Because if you haven't planned that out and you're just sat there with your like, say you're literally batching like 30 models, you kind of don't know what the end result's going to be. You kind of, you might get a bit, you might find a bit of lack of motivation. You just can't see where it's going and you're kind of making too many adaptive changes. And also you might end up like batch painting like that. Say I'd batch painted the black on like 30 models, gone, oh, actually I don't like it. I've already done it on 30 models. And I didn't realize that I didn't like it until the very, very end.
Black's a good underpaint.
For brown. Yeah. Great. Okay, Joe, how are you thinking of tackling the painting process?
Yeah, so, well, I haven't even come up with a colour scheme yet. So this is my issue that I've had. So obviously I've been thinking about it while painting my warband. So I've had a little while to think about it. I think the problem I'm coming up with, I know that I want it obviously to be easier to paint. There's plenty of colour schemes that like I love that are like, do you know what? I would love to do a half and half, but I just can't. I know I can't.
I dabbled with this when I was.
Like, I would love to do a half and half. Yeah. I think they look so cool.
I think you do a Paul Norton, mate. I think you do a metallic scheme and use colour to accent.
The problem is, I've thought.
What's
about
that chapter called? We always forget what that chapter's called.
That's why I call it Paul. Iron Ravens.
Ravens.
Yeah. Better than Raven Guard. But yeah.
Do you know what? That is probably my favourite metallic marine colour scheme.
Yeah.
And I think it's because there's a lot of like normal color on it as well. There's like, I think the shoulder pads might be blue or.
Yeah, they are.
And they have a lot of like, he has the blue stripes on like sergeants and captains and things. And I think that brings it in a little bit more. But I'm not overly keen on metallic marines and stuff.
Do you mean just silver or do you mean like metallic in general? Because
mostly I'm talking about silver, but I think, yeah, in general, potentially, or more likely what I should say is like me painting it.
Right. Okay.
I like, don't think I would enjoy painting metallic.
Well, areas. I'll refer you back to our Painting Faster and Better episode where we spoke about metallic color schemes and how we actually spoke about the Iron Ravens then as well.
Yeah.
How it's a good way to get very, very impressive results for very, very minimal investment.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
What's something going for him?
I could tie it into basically what I had, the idea that I had without getting too complicated with a colour scheme. One thing I do like that not a lot of people seem to do, but I definitely would want to do, is that I like the idea of like, say the secondary colour.
Mm-hmm.
So say they were metallic and then they've got blue as well in the Iron Ravens. I like the idea of like the vehicles and things being the secondary colour. So being like blue or
so
being,
converted.
So like for White Scars, for example, it'd be like if all their vehicles were red.
Yeah.
Like I think that looks
really cool.
Because
it gives you the opportunity to do the kind of like a half and half, but not.
Yeah, it's across the, it'll be a half and half distributed across the force. So in my head, I was working with like black and orange or something. And it'd be like maybe black armor, orange shoulder pads, and then the vehicles and everything are orange, but I also don't want to do black because I think it's just gonna. I do think it looks a bit boring as an army. Like,
yeah,
it's annoying.
Not if you've got gold trim, though. Eh?
Do you know what? The thing is, specifically on Marines, I think it's going to look boring as an army.
Yeah.
But that goes to with what you were saying earlier is that I could probably do a test model of with black armor and orange pads and like everything, and it looked great. Then I think if I saw them all together,
exactly, yeah,
I don't think I would like.
That's why I like recommend
mostly
doing
black
a unit.
Armor army.
That's
do you know what I mean?
That's exactly why I recommend doing a unit. And I know it's an investment. Oh, I've got to paint a unit.
This is like your test army's joke. It's like, I'll just do a unit.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But so what I'm getting at is, my instinct when I'm coming up with these color schemes is often to go like plain and dark, like. Oh, black would be easy, or black would be cool, or because it's neutral, it's like you can't mess it up. Do you know what I mean? You can't mess up the combinations and things.
It's also just quick to build up other color on top of, like, if you do metallic schemes in particular, and you, for example, on the extreme end, like say it was a metallic color scheme, but they had white shoulder pads. Like, have fun blocking in the white over the metallic.
So, I think when I think of what I would want a Space Marine army to look like en masse, I do think I want to do like a bright color, or like a, I don't know. I don't know what color, but I do think I want them to be a bit brighter. Do you know what I mean? Which I think is naturally just making it a harder color scheme to paint.
Like, I don't think that's necessarily true though.
Compared to some of the options that we're coming up with, like I say, like if you're doing black, you're skipping out like a lot of recess shading and stuff
yeah.
that you wouldn't have to do. If you're doing metallic, it's a little bit easier for XYZ reasons, stuff like that. So yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't know where to pull like color schemes from, I think is what I'm getting at. I want it to be a custom color scheme, obviously. I don't want to be like doing an actual chapter or an actual like codex chapter. I did actually, again, this is like black again, but I did think of doing I've always loved the Nurgle thing of the Purge.
Yeah.
The black armor with the orange legs and the orange arms, the green legs, green arms.
Yeah.
But it's just too much work, isn't it? Much work for an army. I was going to do like a loyal version of that.
Yeah. See, this is why I used to like the old tactical boxes. Okay. And I said, because it used to make half and half schemes really easy. The problem with Primaris kits is they're not true multi-part. And this is the thing that makes doing half and half schemes harder, is that because like the torso is kind of joined to the legs by the crotch plate and stuff like that. Whereas with the old like tactical marines, you could just put all the legs on the bases, spray all of them one color, and all the torsos could be another. You could spray them. It made doing half and half schemes, or not directly down the middle,
just like different
schemes.
It made down the middle easier, because the only thing you had to have done the line on was the torso.
Yeah,
you could spray all the limbs and everything, whatever color you wanted.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think you can do that with Primaris though. You can still, like, that's one thing you can do, is that the body can be a solid color and the arms and pads can be different.
Yeah.
So you can still...
You can pretty universally do that. It's the legs and torso are one bit.
Yeah.
But after that, everything is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is separate.
So I'm on the fence at the minute. Like, we get so many different color schemes coming through here as well. And it's so easy to like see one and be like, oh, that's cool. I'll do that actually. Yeah. And then like next week you get another one in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I want to go against what my like
gut feeling
is. Like I would be drawn towards doing like darker or more urban looking, or like fully black armor or something like that. And I know that's not going to look good as a full army. So,
you'll figure it out.
So I'll have to. I mean, I'm open to suggestions from the listeners.
Put in the comments your favorite second founding chapter, and a little bit of to why you think Joe should collect them.
Yeah, and we can.
I think that will help.
We'll have another argument about it at some point next week.
Yeah.
We frequently hear from you with questions asking how you can paint like our team of world-class and award-winning artists. Teaching is something that all of the team here at Siege are very passionate about, and we want to share with you the methods and techniques that we use to paint every single day all of the incredible miniatures and armies that you have seen from us. With the Siege Studios Patreon, you'll gain access to a growing catalogue of over 300 step-by-step tutorials covering a huge variety of colour schemes, miniatures, painting styles, and techniques, from beginner-focused foundation tutorials to full character masterclasses. Each lesson comes in a beautifully designed and easy-to-follow PDF format with accompanying artist commentary, with new tutorials added every single week. Your subscription also includes access to our private patron channels on Discord, so that you can interact directly with our artists, asking for questions or feedback. You'll also be supporting the podcast directly, helping us to bring you these episodes every single week. So if you want to take your painting to the next level and make the most of your very valuable hobby time, head over to patreon.com/Siege Studios.
So I think in summary, like, you should just choose models that you really, really like, as you said, and then I would personally get a plan in place of colors you like painting. I think that's something to start off with. Like, you know, I know there's a reason why I paint red all the time. It's because I love the color. So like, I think if you pick some colors that you actually like and go, well, I do like this color, I think it'd be quite good. But also balance that with what's going to give you the functionality to get it done to where you want it to as quickly as possible. I think that's the fine balance to have. Whether you do a test model or test unit or whatever, I think that at least having something established before a single brush touches a model is going to help you hugely.
Well, I think this conversation has brought validity to the fact that there's a lot of ways to tackle like getting started and planning it. But I think the important thing is to have a plan in place that suits like you and what you're going to do, but have a plan. So James doesn't necessarily want to do like a test model in the same way that I would, but that works for me. So I'm going to do that. But the commonality is we're both like thinking ahead of how this is going to.
Yeah.
You both have your own version of what plan is for you.
Yeah.
I suppose, that's all you can kind of suggest to people. Like, we say it all the time with different techniques and things, like, just because it works for me, it might not work for you, or same with you two on a lot of stuff. Same with you two on how you drill barrels, or how you, what was the other one that was like really you were arguing about?
There's the basing material material. I like to glue, James likes to glue them to the bases and I don't. That was the other one.
I was just going to throw in there as well, and I know I've mentioned it, we haven't mentioned it in quite some time, but having a painting journal is something that I would definitely recommend you do, because it means that you can make some informed choices from the things you've done previously, which I think is quite good. And you've got that library of paint to choose colours for various reasons as well at the back.
So we haven't spoken about the journal in a little while. Do you want to just like give the elevator pitch for the new listeners who might have come on board?
Yeah, so a painting journal is a way to document your projects so that you can come back to them in 3, 6, 12, 18, 24 months and know what colours you use, the process that you've done. And also like have pages or the back of it where you have a library of all your paints, the way they finish, the way they behave, the way they dilute, the way they... You know, the general nature, I always say this, but like paints in general, like people, they all have individual personalities, irrelevant of the manufacturer or range within a manufacturer. Like, I know for a fact that like, you know, Caliban Green or, you know, or Dark Angels Green finishes different to the way Mephiston Red does, and they're both base paints on them, if that makes sense. So like understanding that like paints are like people with personalities and they all are different. And that library of paint at the back is what will allow you to just make informed choices, because you've learned that. I mean, there's something psychological where if you write something down, it's proven that you remember it better, you know? So like, that's why it's really helpful to have one of those. So if you haven't got one, then...
Yeah. Good place to plan your project out as well. I guess before, have you spoken about before, like you, because you have your paint library there with you.
Yeah.
If you go somewhere, if you're on a train or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay, I've got half an hour free while I'm sat on this train.
Yeah,
I'm going to start planning my army out and just looking at the swatches at the back and trying to come up with like, even if it's not like the final recipe that you use, you've kind of got like an informed choice. Just knowing by looking at it, okay, well, this paint's brighter than this one, it's going to be the second highlight layer.
And so on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not something I've got in place at the minute, but
maybe you might soon.
maybe.
Question of the week time. Thank you everyone for submitting your questions for question of the week. If you have a question that you'd like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, please leave it in the comments down below on YouTube, or you can fire us a DM on Instagram at Siege Studios, or you can leave us a message on the Siege Studios Discord. This week, we have a question from UZZ7114, who says... question about using the wet palette. I have an army painter one. I love using it, but when I put the lid on and leave it overnight and come back to paint the next day, all of my paint is super diluted and basically unusable. This seems to happen no matter how much water I put on the sponge. Do you have any tips or suggestions? This is not limited to the army painter palette either. This is kind of...
This is just a wet palette.
This is just a wet palette thing.
Yeah. That is very, very common for it, because just number one, if you put the lid on, it traps and seals the environment, which theoretically stops it from drying out, but the problem is the wet palette is constantly evaporating, so if the water has got nowhere to go because the lid is on it, then it retains within that environment, and it does... I've had it before with my...
comes a little humidifier almost, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Yeah, especially if it's a hot... if you've got more sort of like temperate weather and it is hotter, I find in my Tupperware setup that I'll come in and it's almost like... do you remember going to a festival in the heat of summer and like the roof would get all the moisture from
the tent?
If you knock the wall, it's like an inside
storm. When you're camping.
My wet palette is a bit like that if it's been left, you know, which is why I did recommend the mini fridge. Not that everyone has got access
well,
to
some paints as well, like do just separate. Find the line as well, because some of it is the humid environment. And some of it is, if you leave a paint overnight, even in a bottle, it will separate.
Yeah.
Metallics, specifically wet palettes.
And the reason I know that is true is because if I'm doing a very, very long paint session, say like 8-12 hours, after a couple of hours, the lid's not on because I'm still painting. You can literally watch your paint like slowly separate on the palette.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bail you out, Joe, with your April hobby hack, because I've got a hobby hack that overlaps with this. Not really a hack, but... I'm going to work it in anyway.
True bailing me out would be to like not mention it.
Yeah.
But he's called me out in front of everyone, brought attention
to it. True paint perspective style.
What a friend didn't even give you it to use. Yeah. You know, like,
it's fine. I already know he doesn't have one. We'll get to that. But my hobby hack for this is lid of your palette. I don't know if this would work for the Tupperware. I suppose it would.
Doesn't even know if it'll work.
For the Tupperware. If you're with my palette, I will, it's got like that seal, like the the water seal around the edge. Don't be using that. Either just rest your lid very, very lightly on the palette, or leave it with just a little bit of a crack so that it's not like a perfectly sealed environment. And you'll find that come the next day, it will still be moist in there, but there's somewhere for this like evaporation to escape. Similar to like if you're like boiling water on a stovetop, like, and you put the lid on it,
you don't need somewhere
for it to escape. You'll find that some of your paints might dry out a little bit. It's going to just depend from paint to paint, but generally I found that's a pretty foolproof way of avoiding this as a whole, with the caveat of paints that do separate and some might just happen to dry out a little bit. It's going to depend on like the weather and the climate in your house, but that's a pretty foolproof way of getting around it. Like a little crack in the end, like, you know, centimeter or so usually does the trick for me. Yeah, hobby hacks. This is our closing segment of the show where we share a little hobby hack with you.
I got stitched up with this because we all realized how we hadn't thought about whether we were pre-recording stuff as well.
Uh-huh.
So I got stitched up from the get-go with this.
Just to rewind, we did discuss this at the end of one of our previous episodes of we couldn't work out who had come up with the fact that you would have to do all of the ones in
it
April.
Was you.
No. So you're doing it again now.
I love the way that I lit the fuse and stepped back and walked away.
We rolled back the tape. We saw that James actually came up with that idea. And you threw me under the bus for it.
I haven't seen the clip.
You have seen the clip.
No one showed me the clip.
Disregard this. He's seen the clip.
No one showed me the clip.
I just thought it would be good for you to come up with them because I think when we were speaking about it, it kind of roundabout came about.
I can't believe you're just lying. You have seen the clip. I put it in our Slack channel. I put it in the Slack channel.
I didn't watch it.
I just thought from the conversation we're having at the time, it was a natural conversation they're having whereby something came up.
I got stitched up.
And I was like, well, why don't you come up with a hobby hack for that month then? Yeah. And then you were like, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And then I was like,
so you accepted it? Are you own free will?
Oh, but we're like, and then at the end of the next one, I was like, oh, but this one's coming out in April. So we're pre-recording like all the April ones pretty much.
I think he came up with one. I think that was the title.
I think so. Do you know what as well? In that conversation, I believe I said that I'd never come up with one.
Yeah.
But that was it. That was it.
I said that you'd come up with one before. Yeah.
It was the texture paint basic material thing, like using that to put thin down your texture paint. I'll do it again now. thin down your texture paint to put your basing sand on rather than using like PVA glue, blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Great. So there you go. The listeners have got a recycled hobby hack and one sort of new one that was sort of question of the week.
But, so why don't you do the ones in May?
No. No, I don't think I will.
Didn't work a second time.
No, he wasn't taking the bait, James.
No, but I did say to George earlier, like, I don't have one.
Yeah.
And I don't appreciate being pushed, like, I don't like the structure of the hobby hack, really. Like, oh, you have to do something.
I'll just say for the record, you didn't say you didn't have one. You said, I'm going to quote here, telling you now,
he's got the actual phrase, the actual terminology.
You said, telling you now, I don't have a final hack. I prefer to let my wisdom naturally find its way to the listener throughout the episode. It's true. On that note, thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of Paint Perspective. If you want to support the show, please check out the links in the description for the wonderful Onyx painting lamp. You can also get a commission from us, all those good things that you've heard throughout the episode. Thank you everyone. We will catch you next week.